Hello, everyone. This is Ryan, host and executive producer of the Outer Limits of Intertooth Radio Show. I just want to let you know that we're airing two shows tonight. The first one's going to be on Miss Rosemary Ellen Guiley. That's a show on this particular track. The other show we're going to do is a remastered version of the Forensic Soul Analysis we did on Jesus Christ. It's one of our most popular shows, but actually, a lot of people did not hear it. Our audience has grown so much in the past 3 years that many people will be hearing it for the first time tonight. So I want to let you know that. And I want to let you know that next week we're going to be airing our second annual Christmas show. So thank you so much for listening. Love all your support. And let us begin tonight's program. Welcome to the Outer Limits of Inner Tooth Radio Show, OuterLimitsRadio.com. I'm your host, Ryan. Tonight, we're going to feature an interview with Ms. Rosemary Ellen Guiley. She's an author of 60 books, metaphysical teacher. There's a lot to cover with her. She offers a lot of great inside information. We're going to ask her a lot of questions about how to evolve, grow, tips, advice. There's so much to cover. The Outer Limits of Inner Tooth Radio Show proudly presents an introspective interview with Ms. Rosemary Ellen Guiley. Our guest today on the Outer Limits of Inner Tooth Radio Show is Ms. Rosemary Ellen Guiley. She's a leading expert in the metaphysical paranormal fields with more than 60 books published on paranormal, spiritual, and metaphysical topics, including 9 single-volume encyclopedias and reference works. You can learn more about Ms. Guiley by going to her website at visionaryliving.com. Miss Guiley, great honor. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Hi, Ryan. It's a real pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. 60 books written. So that's probably 59 more books than the average person has read in their lifetimes. How did you write so many books? What was the creative inspiration for writing so many books?
Well, I think I was a born writer, Ryan. I joke often that I literally came out of the womb with a manuscript in mid-progress, and I've been writing my entire life. So I had a career in creative writing and journalism, and from 1983 onward as an author and now independent publisher as well as an author. And my passion is the paranormal, the metaphysical, strange phenomena, spiritual development, and so it's my passion to write about these things, and there's just always new things to discover.
All right. When it comes to paranormal, you talk to people, and I think most people would say that, you know, they had a gut feeling or a bad feeling or a good feeling that something would happen, and they kind of just write it off, and they kind of dismiss it as normal. Yet it seems to be a visual description of extrasensory perception. What do you think is the line between what people perceive as accepted forms of paranormal or ESP and other forms that are maybe met with more skepticism?
Well, in terms of the intuition and the gut instinct, it all boils down to one thing. It's psychic ability, and everybody is born with it. The term psychic makes some people feel uncomfortable. They associate it with fortune tellers and perhaps magical rituals, whereas the intuition is a much safer word. It's acceptable in corporate circles and things like that. But it all boils down to the same skill, your ability to sense things beyond the 5 senses in terms of seeing, hearing, feeling, even tasting. And these could be your ability to see opportunities that haven't manifested or know something that's going to happen before it happens, or you're able to assess situations and people without having facts and figures in front of you, but your psychic sense tells you in very clear terms what's going on. And very successful people use this ability to their success. And they may call it gut hunches, instinct, fly by the seat of my pants, my lucky stars, however you want to describe it. It all boils down to psychic power.
Okay. A gentleman named Malcolm Gladwell wrote a great book called Blink, and he talked about a technique called thin slicing, which means that people think without even really thinking, and they can come to a conclusion
maybe based on doing the same project or same action several times, and it actually comes to him. So I'm wondering what the difference between intuition is and the ability of coming to a conclusion based on doing something so many times and having a logical familiarity to it.
I'm not real familiar with his research, so okay. I'm going to have to speculate there. But naturally, the more familiar we are with information, with fields, with skills, that's going to play into your expanded sense involving your intuition and skill. For example, athletes. It's been well documented among athletes that at certain times they seem to find themselves in what's called the zone. And they may have practiced and practiced and practiced their skill over and over again, but there are times when they are vaulted into a timelessness where a psychic faculty takes over, and they can see, sense, feel, and experience things literally beyond the five senses. So the fact that they've just repeated their skill training over and over again doesn't really adequately explain why these moments happen. These were well documented in the 1970s by Michael Murphy in a book called Golf in the Kingdom, and then by Rio White and Michael Murphy in a follow-up book that really looked at called In the Zone. And those apply to anyone who's has a skill set, even to writers. You know, writers talk about getting in the zone. Corporate executives can be in the zone, inventors, scientists. We can all enter that state of being beyond time and space, where things become crystal clear to us, where we see things that weren't obvious to us before. And our familiarity with those topics and skills simply adds to that particular breakthrough.
Sure. What have you found in your experience are some of the ways that a person can enhance their intuition, and also what are some of the ways that people can trigger themselves quickly into being more intuitive?
Practice, 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 of course. You know, that old adage, Ryan, when we do things over and over again, that builds up a skill too. And having a daily practice of meditation, I recommend that to everyone, because it builds our spiritual conditioning, it strengthens the aura, it connects us to spirit, and it also makes us more predisposed to being receptive to intuition or psychic ability, however you want to describe it. And then there are lots of just really skill-building exercises that you can do. And I've done so many of them over the years. I compiled them all into a book called Guide to Psychic Power, which is a self-study way of literally working the muscle of every single psychic sense, involving all of the five senses. I also recommend to people that if they really want to go deeply into developing their ability, to take some at least beginning courses in energy healing. Because when you learn energy healing, you are sensing things that are not physical. And most energy healing systems have very organized ways of training you how to open up and gather information psychically, and then validate the accuracy of that, and then also how to keep your boundaries closed so that you're not unduly impinged by things that you don't want intruding on you. So there are lots of ways to go about it, but there's no like instant way to suddenly become wildly psychic. Most people, when they have intuitive / psychic flashes, and we all get them from time to time, there's an immediate and natural reaction to dismiss it, ignore it, or question it, because it goes against everything the left brain wants to deal with, which is facts and figures and the woulds and the shoulds. So the psychic insight will frequently work against that grain. And we have to learn how to pay attention to how we receive our information. It's different for everybody. We don't all get psychic signals in exactly the same way. So we have to practice and figure out how our particular psychic voice makes itself known to us. and act on it so that we can build up a confidence in it. So many times people wait for some big crisis in life, and they've suddenly got to know exactly what to do, and they're paralyzed. It's difficult for them to make a decision because they can't see things clearly. And this is where that particular skill comes into a great advantage. If we spend the time to nurture it, to use it on a daily basis and things that aren't crisis oriented, then when something major comes along, then we do have the confidence to rely on what our higher senses are telling us.
Okay. What is the difference? How can people tell the difference between a message that is coming to them that is pure and one that is being filtered through their ego? How do they know that they're being facilitating or gaining a genuine message from their spirit and not one coming through their mind? And also, let me add a third element there, not coming through a malicious being posing as an angelic being.
It's quite understandable how people might mistake ego-driven information, what seems to be messages or certainties, as opposed to the intuition. And the only way you're going to sort that out is through experiencing, paying attention to what you feel is your intuition, and then acting on it. That's really the only way to figure it out. Usually the ego-driven voice is full of I shoulds and I musts and these sorts of weighted kinds of things that operate in our head all the time. You know, we have to do something because somebody expects us to, or because we're dead set on a certain course of action, and the intuitive voice will often steer us in another direction. Well, unless you pay attention to that voice and act on it, you don't have your own information set in terms of which is accurate and which is not. But every single one of us walking around on this planet has had an experience where something has blown up in our faces and we've said, I knew it was going to happen that way. I knew it wasn't going to work out. We got the information and we decided to ignore it. So paying attention to those situations can help us figure out exactly how our inner guidance is working. Many people get very strong physical signals, and so you have to pay attention to them. Quite a bit goes on in the gut, which is why it's called the gut instinct. And bad feelings, nausea, tension, feeling like you've been sucker punched, that's the intuition telling you that something is not a very good idea. Something that's a little more expansive, like a tingling, a lightness, an energy, a buzzing sort of energy, might indicate to someone that something is really a good idea. But as I mentioned earlier, we all get our information in ways that are unique to us. There are general ways that people get information, but no two people are exactly the same. And so we just have to pay attention, act on it, and start to figure it out.
Scully, if you look at the average American, you see how big and fat they are. Are you surprised that more Americans or overwhelming majority of Americans aren't psychic? Because they figure they would have a lot of gut feelings because they seem to have a big gut.
Well, I don't think the size of one's girth has anything to do
with
psychic ability.
What about your background? How did you become passionate about the paranormal? And did you have any experiences when you were a child that would really exacerbate your creativity or exacerbate your curiosity?
Well, I did have experiences. I think virtually every child does. Children are very open and highly imaginative, and the fact that they spend a lot of time in creative playtime makes them predisposed to a lot of psychic input. And, of course, it varies. There are psychic wunderkinds who have lots of encounters with the dead, for example, at a very early age. But most of us have had at least more than one experience by the time we hit adulthood. And I had experiences primarily with angels and fairies. I didn't see dead people until I got much older, until I was in my early adulthood. And my mother had a lot of psychic ability, and she had spirit visitations, and she was a very prolific psychic dreamer with premonitory dreams, usually of bad things that were going to happen. Jeez. And these sorts of things stimulated my interest in terms of what was going on, because, you know, when you're a kid, you think everybody has shares the same sets of experiences. And it was, you know, astonishing to me to find out that not everybody does when it comes to psychic things, and that some people are very skeptical and even in denial about these sorts of things, and that it's that they aren't real. And so that propelled a lot of my curiosity to learn more about what was going on, because I knew I was having experiences, and I did not consider them to be imagination or hallucination or fantasy. They were part of an extended reality that operated beyond the physical world. And of course, I didn't articulate that when I was a lot younger, but it did fuel a lot of my interest in terms of what's going on here, and how widespread are these experiences, and how can we validate them?
Okay. And as far as the premonition goes, did you ever have any major premonition in your life that came true and it really shocked you? And also, in the same token, have you had any other premonitions about events that will likely occur in the U.S. and the world?
I don't really operate on a world scale. For example, I never really had the premonitory dreams that my mother had, and neither did my sister. Although she has psychic ability as well. And in each of us, that ability has played out in different ways for us. I have not anticipated world cataclysmic events. The premonitions that I've had are more on a scale relative to my personal life. And, you know, I've had many over the course of years, and some of them I've ignored to my detriment, and some of them I've paid attention to my benefit. And I think all of us are in those positions all the time where, you know, if we're really going to benefit the most from the intuitive voice, we do have to be prepared to listen to us. And when experience demonstrates to us that we got the guidance and we chose to ignore it, and things didn't work out well for us, then, well, that's a lesson learned.
Is there anything that you've, I guess, determined that would sense that would give you an idea that events that could have happened didn't happen? Like, did you ever have a sense or feeling that our trajectory of humanity was going to go down some dark path, or do we have a chance of, collectively speaking, going down on a lighter path, but we're going on a dark path? I guess I'm curious to know how often the fate can be changed, or if it is something that can be locked in for the greater soul purpose.
Well, I think things are quite malleable, and yet there might be certain destinies that are set, we may not know the how or why of it. But otherwise, events are constantly in motion. They are forces in motion. And forces in motion head in certain directions. And if nothing alters that sense of direction, then you can start to anticipate certain kinds of outcome. So our little bubble, consciousness bubble of the individual, is in a force in motion at play all the time with everything else going on in the cosmos. And this is one of the reasons why all of the great mystics have always stressed the importance of collective thought, that collective thought unifies a force in motion toward a certain goal. And so whether or not certain events come to pass depends upon this very complicated set of forces in motion at any given time. And I think that when, for example, let's say there's a catastrophe that that happens, that it's like an airplane roll. There's a certain point where the forces in motion have passed the point of no return, and the event is going to happen. And it's at that point when many people start picking up on things psychically. They start seeing it, feeling it, anticipating it. This has been borne out in retro studies of major disasters. At what point did you feel that this event, or know for certainty that this event was going to happen? Usually that's within 2 or 3 days of the actual event. There's another window of perception that extends into the 2 to 3 week time frame. And then beyond that, it's very unusual to find masses of people anticipating something way, way out from the actual event itself. And I think it's because there are just too many forces in play. And I do readings. And I always tell clients when they ask if something's going to happen, my feeling of a reading, or at least the readings I do, we're looking at a time frame in linear time, 6 to 12 months. And beyond 12 months, there have been so many changes in the forces in motion that you really need to take another look at things. You might even need to take another look at things much sooner than that, because so many things will have shifted based upon people's actions, their thoughts, and their decisions. So all of these things come into a very complex set of circumstances that influence all of these things. And I think that are there things that are absolutely set in concrete? I don't know. My feeling is that I think that there are leanings toward things happening, that there may be destinies that have good chances of playing out, but are still very malleable. I do believe that there is at least one parallel universe that exists where 9/11 never happened. And there are pieces of us living in that parallel universe doing similar but different things, and it's a very different set of reality characteristics. And from a Buddhist point of view, and especially a Zen point of view, these parallel realities are spun off all the time. I mean, you not even by the second, even faster than that. You know, there's a Zen saying that you are not the same person when you finish a sentence as you were when you started it. And so we have the potential for myriads upon myriads and myriads of parallel realities being spun off at any given moment. And I do believe in the multidimensionality of the soul, that we live in more than one reality. And so I'm sure that there are pieces of us having simultaneous multiple experiences in many realities at any given time.
Okay. How do people, let's say, pull to their experience? Let me say it this way, Ms. Kylie. I'm trying to think of the correct words for this thing. You mentioned that there are multiple realities. So, for example, people aren't thrilled with the reality that they're currently in right now. How do they pull a majority of their consciousness to a reality where, say, for example, as you mentioned before, 9/11 didn't happen? How can they pull themselves to reality where the world is not the way it is in this present reality? How do they pick up and move and pull that happen? Or is it possible?
Theoretically, it might be possible, but we have so little information on just how consciousness operates, and really no good answers to that effect. There are some people who feel that we can experience our simultaneous lives at various points, you know, that technically there really is no such thing as a past life because everything happens concurrently. I think a bigger question that needs to be asked is that what we are meant to do in this reality? Is there something about this reality that we are meant to be focused on rather than trying to leave this reality and remove ourselves to some other reality where we're already at anyway? And I think that there is at some stage in the evolution of the soul where we are able to pull up to a higher perspective and perceive all of these things. But the limitations of human consciousness at present may not provide much opportunity to do that. For example, if it is true, as many people believe, that Earth is a place of learning and a place of working out karma, then you're not doing yourself any favors by trying to exit this place and go somewhere else. You're better off trying to improve your skill set to do the best job you possibly can while you are incarnate in this reality.
Okay. If you were to, say for example, America was a person and came to you for reading, what kind of analysis would you give America? What kind of psychic analysis would you give America? As far as I know, what do you see?
The founding principles of this country, I consider our founding fathers to be highly spiritualized individuals with great vision. And the forces that they set in motion to create this nation with the set of governing agents that we have and the concept of democracy, equality, the Bill of Rights for the individual, all of the things that were set into place by the founding of this nation had never before existed upon this planet in one country. And these have to be safeguarded. There is a spirit of America. I think that, this is being tested now in this election time where we have quite a few people saying, we are being called to remember our roots and what we stand for and what we are really, truly about ethically, morally, and spiritually. This goes beyond selfish concerns, and everyone in this country, whether it is an entity of a political party or an individual or a group of individuals, should have that compass to orient itself around. And we're seeing in the election, this year that things have, I think there are a lot of people who have lost sight of the vision that this country was founded upon, regardless of who you are for in this election. I think we need to reexamine the spiritual principles that this country was founded upon and ask how we are serving those principles. We seem to be going through a period of change, and anytime you have a period of change, there is a breakdown of a certain degree of order and tumult and chaos while something else is developed and put into place. I do not think that America's day is over. Nonetheless, every country has a lifespan, and we have seen this just in the history of the earth, that all of the great nations and powers that have risen have then descended, and some of them have come back up again, but in different ways. And, it's a birth, life, and death cycle and a cycle of regeneration. So, but I think that America has a long ways to go. And nonetheless, I think that we're in for a difficult period of change, and that's why it's more important than ever to keep ourselves oriented around the highest possible ideals. We're more plugged into a global picture than ever, and this has more of an impact on us now than human beings ever experienced at any time in the past, even You could say that even applies to two or three decades ago, that we are so joined at the hip now through the internet and social media that the reverberations of anything that happens in the world, it affects all of us, not just part of us. And so this is something that humanity as a whole is grappling with and going to have to come to terms with. It's not just us. It's all people all over the planet. And challenging times ahead. But one of the things that I feel about human beings is that humans are very resilient. And no matter how dark things have been in times in the past, when you look at history, human beings always have the capability of rising above that and coming out on top. And so I have a lot of confidence in the collective human spirit and the collective human consciousness to take the high road. But it's not going to be an easy thing to do.
Okay. As far as individuals, leaders, or prominent people, do you ever sense, can you sense around a person if they've got light or dark influences around them? And I'm curious to know, in the current era, not just America, but the world, do you sense that there are prominent leaders that have more of a darkness, dark influence, or dark beings around them? Because, the reason why I ask this is because the way the media portrays it, or the way it seems the world's going, it seems that there's just march to go to another war. And I don't know many people that want that. I mean, I'm just, what about the peace? Is there any chance of getting peace? And I just didn't know what your thoughts were or what kind of influences you see or sense around the current leaders of the world and the U.S.
Well, there is always the chance for peace. I don't think the door is ever closed to that. But I do believe that there are forces of darkness that operate through human beings, and they have as long as we've been on the planet. And they prey upon people of weakness, people who are greedy for power or money or fame, people who want to oppress and manipulate, people who have bloodthirst. Yes, I think it is possible for individuals predisposed in those ways to be influenced by dark forces. There are entities that I think participate in chaos and warfare that are energized by the shedding of blood and encourage people to those ends. So we are challenged to be very spiritually aware of what's going on, and this transcends the agendas of the daily life and the physical realm, that there's always something going on in the higher planes in any given situation.
Okay.
And we need to be more aware of that. The rise of the internet and social media have encouraged large segments of our populations to be mired in the minutia of me stuff. And that has a potential to be to our collective detriment, because human beings have to be united in a collective higher vision in order to make progress and to overcome the evil.
Okay. In your personal life, what are some of the toughest life lessons you had to learn? And it's a two-part question. How did you manage to overcome and heal from your darkest moment?
I think everybody goes through a dark night of the soul. It's also different for every person that, and you may go through more than one in your life, but, you reach a point where, something significant shakes your life or your worldview to the core. And for, these can be health crises, money crises, relationship crises, purpose of life crises, they can precipitate, a dark night of the soul in varying degrees. And so, you know, we all have it, and there are lessons to be learned. I was very young in life when I realized that one of the most important, precious things that you have is health, and you can't buy it. If you haven't got your health, it becomes very difficult to prosper in life. And yet there are people who have been beset by very dreadful health issues and for much of their lives. And my heart goes out to those people because I know the pain and the struggle of coping with those kinds of things. So health has been very important to me, love is also very important because you can't really buy that either. And so I think I was, you know, fairly young when I learned how unimportant materialism is. And, you know, I do not live like a monk. I'm not a Trappist by any means. I don't eschew possessions, but my life is not oriented around the pursuit of possessions or money. I want to have enough to be comfortable and to pursue my work, and to have food on the table and a roof over my head and a loving husband, which I have. And those to me are, I never take them all for granted. They are the most precious things to me that enable me to pursue a deeply spiritual work. And I consider all of this, even the paranormal, to have a profound spiritual component to them. So I think those were things that I've all grappled with in varying degrees over the course of my life. I've certainly had opportunities to do other things as a writer that would have been far more financially rewarding than what I'm doing now. And I'm glad I didn't take those because they would have been spiritually empty. And I think we were often challenged to find that fine line between pursuit, because money is energy and we have to have money in order to take care of ourselves, our families, to do things, to enjoy life. But there is a fine line where pursuit of money for the sake of money and for the sake of power then becomes very destructive. So I think all of us have lessons like that.
One thing that you offer as a skill is being able to clear out haunted houses or provide insight. Why are some houses haunted? And can a house actually be haunted by a residual energy of a person who is still alive?
Well, the answer is yes and yes. There are many reasons why houses become haunted. And fundamentally, houses absorb the energy of the people who occupy them. And depending upon what happens in a house and the emotional fields of a person, that energy can really be absorbed and linger as residual things, or it can dissipate over time and be replaced by a new set of energy when, for example, new people come and live in a house. There's also energy of land, and land has good energy and has bad energy, and that can affect the atmosphere of a house as well. There are spirits who like land with good energy, and there are spirits who like land with bad energy.
What's the difference? What's the difference between good energy or bad energy land? Like, why would I? What's the comparable difference?
Well, a house built on land with bad energy would be a place where negative spirits like to hang out. Okay. And there are places like that. There are everywhere around the earth. All people know certain areas to be cursed land, for example, that people do not prosper if they live there because it belongs to something else.
Sure.
And
what would attract
so,
them? What would attract them? What would attract the negative spirits to a particular piece of land or a house?
It could be the configuration of the land. It could be geophysical features. It could be content of the soil. There are certain things that are common to negative areas. They don't necessarily predict a negative area or make a negative area, but things like tunnels, caves, high water tables, the presence of iron, quartzite, magnetic kinds of things in the soil. If the formula is right, then it might the land itself might generate a frequency of energy that is conducive to the manifestation of lower energy. And then there are places that are conducive to the manifestation of higher energy. The entire art form of feng shui is based upon this, using the energy and the contours of the land and the structures of buildings and the things inside of buildings in order to maximize good energy and minimize negative energy. So these things can be factors in what happens in a house. And then, of course, the biggest wild card of all is people, because people bring a set of energy with them. Consciousness has emotions, thoughts, thought patterns. Some people can project out into the environment more than others. People who are chronically depressed or angry are going to spew a whole negative field of energy into a house, whereas people are happy and well-adjusted and spiritually minded, have spiritual practices in a house, are going to imbue it with an entirely different frequency. So a haunting can be a combination of all of those things. And so remedies for eradicating something can depend on the reasons why things are present in the first place. And so there are some things, there are topical remedies that can be useful in many cases, but there aren't really any remedies that are 100% effective in 100% of cases because of all of these variables.
Okay. So if a person's got their house haunted, what are some of the things you recommend doing? Do they sage? Do they get a do holy water? Do they get a what do you recommend? Some of the first things they should do.
Well, the first thing you have to do is figure out what's the problem and why is it there.
Okay.
Because I could tell you to I could give you a laundry list of things to do, but it might be like slapping a Band-Aid on a tumor. Until you know what the problem is, you can't really do the right things to rectify it. If you, just kind of want to improve the atmosphere of a house, then things like saging it, putting quartz, nice quartz crystals around, those sorts of things can, it's like Glade, kind of freshen up a place. But if you you have some serious presences in a place, that's like asking cockroaches politely to leave, it's not going to help. So it's a good idea to, kind of spiritually freshen up a house every now and then, and herbs can do it. In folk magic, there are washes that you can wash down the floors, herbal washes and things like that. Having a sound spiritual practice like daily prayer or meditation will go a long, long way to keeping the energy in a place quite good. Sometimes a bad atmosphere can relate to an object that was brought into a house that had a spirit attached to it. So if that's the case, then the object has to be identified and taken out. There are just a whole lot of things that calling someone onto the scene, they're going to run down an inventory of looking for things that will help identify what a problem is. There are some places that no matter what you do, not much is going to change. It might change for a while, but that's fundamentally the way the place is. And then you have to decide whether or not you can live with it.
Okay. And one of the topics of discussion you've written about extensively is called scrying. I'm trying to get the pronunciation of it. When you look into a mirror and you gaze and you really focus your time, effort, and attention, did I say it properly? Is that the correct?
Yes, that's right.
What is that? I mean, can you please explain it to our audience and also explain what the benefits of it are? And also, is there anything you should be careful of by doing that?
Anytime you open the door of the spirit world, you have to be careful. A tool is neutral, but how a tool is used can determine the nature of the experience. So it's not for entertainment. It's not for thrills. It requires being well-grounded and focused and having some knowledge of the spirit world. Can beginners do things like this? Sure. Is the average person going to have a bad experience? Probably not. So I think people have a lot of probably unreasonable anxiety about spirit communication because the media feeds on fear. But gazing into a black, shiny surface is a very ancient technique for opening the door to the spirit world. And so I teach black mirrors scrying. I've been doing workshops for years. And it's especially helpful for people wanting to make contact with the dead, especially for having closure. And it can be a very powerful tool, a very healing tool in that regard.
Okay. And final question I have for you, Ms. Kylie, is what is the best piece of advice you can offer someone who's on the spiritual path? What do you recommend for them to enhance or increase their capability of growing faster, and growing more in alignment with love and peace?
My piece of advice for people on the spiritual path, and I think that'll be my final comment today, is to have a spiritual grounding in your life, regardless of what your religion is or your spiritual philosophy. It's important to have some sort of spiritual underpinning. And it doesn't matter whether you're engaged in the paranormal or the metaphysical. It becomes paramount importance the deeper you go, because no matter where you start, we all wind up heading in the same direction, asking the same questions about why things happen, who we are, why we're here, and what is our purpose. Okay. And so having that spiritual underpinning is very important, because the deeper you go and the longer you are on your path, you will be tested. You will be tested by human opposition, by spiritual opposition, and the brighter your light, the more attention you're going to attract, positive and negative. So one becomes a spiritual warrior. And having a spiritual center strengthens an individual's focus. It helps an understanding of why we're here, what are we doing with our lives, and how we fit into the big picture. That's the most important thing we can do to orient ourselves around those matters, because then it becomes possible to pursue a higher level spiritual work, no matter what we're doing in life. Everything has its spiritual component. One does not need to be a writer of paranormal and metaphysical and mystical books, for example, to have a spiritual focus. Everyone has a spiritual focus, no matter what we're doing in life. So finding that level of meaning is very important, and it is achievable through a daily practice of prayer and meditation, especially meditation. In this world of distraction and 10-second mindsets and attention spans, having that ability to calm the body and still the mind for a length of time is an invaluable skill and will enable an individual to weather upsets, obstacles, and challenges much better and to maintain a better harmony and equilibrium in life.
Okay. Miss Rosemary Ellen Guiley, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. You can learn more about Ms. Guiley by going to her website at visionaryliving.com. Here's here to sign up for a newsletter. She's written incredible books. She's got a lot of events. Ms. Guiley, it was a real honor and a pleasure to have you with us today.
Well, thank you, Ryan. I enjoyed our conversation.
Okay, everyone, that concludes today's edition of the Out of Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show. Special thanks to our incredible guest, Ms. Rosemary Ellen Guiley. Special thanks, as always, to our virtues, Ms. Carrie O'Connor, Ms. Laura Lynn, Ms. Lisa Kaza, and Ms. Constance Dallas. To learn more about the Outer Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show, please go to our website at outerlimitsradio.com. Till the next time we meet, my friends, wishing upon you an abundance of peace, love, and beer. Take good care. Have an unbelievable rest of the week.